what we call telecare, which is it's an online call where anybody who's involved with workers' comp injury, rather than calling HR, speaks to a registered nurse. So we've been able to reduce our emergency room visits and our overall, I'll call it comp administration and comp medical costs as a result of having faster medical advice right there on site. So we're actually getting people back to work same day more often than we used to. So it's been a combination of factors, and we're seeing the incident and accident rates dropping, and that since, as many of you know, there's about a 2-year lag on your experience record in workers' comp, we're now just beginning to see the fruits of our labor, and we hope to continue to see that over the next few years as we come back off of that peak and begin to go forward with the new structure. So it's really good news. We're very excited about it.
Thank you. That's helpful. I think the next item is the what we call our superintendent's perspective, and Patrice, I believe that will be you.
Yeah, I'll just do a quick introduction. We're really excited to have the Deputy Director and General Counsel for the Connecticut Association of Boards of Education, known as CABE. So they represent your groups across the state. Patrice has been a dear partner to learn to the RESC Alliance, and her knowledge and skills are unparalleled across the state. So we're just really happy to get some information and expertise about what's happening, and especially looking forward. We're about to walk into a legislative session and thinking about, you know, as board members, what do we need to be prepared to think about as we go into this next session and be listening for. So thank you so much for being here, Patrice. We are honored that you could join us.
Well, thank you so much for that introduction. And it's always a pleasure to visit LEARN, even though this morning it's virtually. I wish I could see you all in person, but that time will come again. I want to begin by commending all of the board members, your superintendents, the executive directors of the service centers, and all of your staff for the incredible work that you have been doing over the past 9 months now. I'm on calls every week with my colleagues from around the country, and the work that has been done in Connecticut to make every effort possible to have a range of opportunities available to our students, to engage them, even in these challenging environments, is really remarkable. So I give you all credit for the work that you're doing, and encourage you to take a pause at some point during this holiday season to at least take a deep breath before we plunge into 2021. And for any of you that aren't aware, CABE has been doing, we began with weekly, and now that things are a little more stable, every other week on Thursday mornings at 11, we have a virtual meeting for all board chairs. And you can hop on. We often have a guest. We've had the Commissioner of Education. We've had officials from the Department of Public Health, Doug Casey talking about technology. And then we always make sure there's time for board chairs to share challenges and successes that they're having in their districts. So many board chairs have been regular participants and find that connection to be very helpful. And it's just an hour. We do record those so that if that's not a convenient time if you're the board chair for your workday, those are archived on the CABE website. So looking ahead to the legislative session, I had to write my column for the CABE Journal yesterday, View from the Capitol. And I thought, well, the view is probably going to look a little like what I see on my screen right now. A lot of squares of people communicating with each other, but in a very different environment than we're used to seeing at the legislative office building and the Capitol. CABE's Day on the Hill was on March 11th. That was the last day that the legislature convened in their typical fashion, shortly after the Capitol and Legislative Office Building complex were closed. They have gotten together sort of virtually in the building, but voting from their, for the most part, from their offices. So they are able to take action without physically being present in the chamber, at least for the House of Representatives. It, interestingly enough, the Senate, a much smaller body, lacks the technology for their members to be able to vote remotely. But I'm sure they're working on that. So what do we look forward to? Well, the good news is there is stability in the leadership of the Education Committee. Senator McCrory and Representative Sanchez return as the co-chairs of that committee. Representative McCarty has been reappointed as the House ranking member. We don't yet know, the appointments haven't been made for the Senate ranking member, but we'll have experienced legislators guiding that committee. Incoming Speaker of the House, Matt Ritter, has indicated that there will need to be more restraint in the number of bills that actually go to public hearing, because he anticipates that at least for the first half of the session, they will be working virtually. So that means all the committee hearing processes are likely to be in a virtual environment. Now, he also said that the good news about that is there'll be more opportunity for public participation, because people will be able to sit in their homes in their sweatpants at 4 a.m. and testify. And for those of us that need to monitor all those committee meetings, that did not sound like the good news to us, the 4 a.m. part. The fact that you would be able to participate from your home or from your office is good news, because avoiding that drive to the Capitol and those long hours that some of you, I see Bob Mitchell nodding vigorously, long hours waiting to testify can make it just impractical to for you to be there in person. So everyone's going to be working through the new process. Just like in your schools, I'm sure there will be technology glitches that we'll have to be patient with, but business will go on at the Capitol. In terms of issues that they'll deal with, the biennial state budget has to be adopted. So doing that in this virtual environment will be even, I think, more challenging for legislators than the challenges they already face in getting agreement on a budget. This is the long session year, so it begins on January 6th and ends in early June. I would not anticipate that they'll be adopting a budget until late May or early June, because that's just how the process usually plays out. And that makes it particularly challenging for local communities, because you won't know about your state grant amounts until well after you've developed and probably adopted locally your budgets. Another issue that we certainly anticipate being debated is the issue of vaccinations. The legislature was considering that issue during the past legislative session. They were considering removing the religious exemption that parents currently have, because it's very broad. A parent simply states that they have a religious objection to vaccinating their child and they are excused from the vaccination requirements. Obviously, COVID has put an even stronger light on the issue of vaccinations. This is an issue of particular concern to the Speaker of the House, which means that it will be discussed. And I think that will probably take up quite a bit of time and quite a bit of public hearing comment. So with that, I'm going to stop and see what questions you have or issues that you're concerned about.
Patrice, I was curious about whether or not, when will vaccination be available for teaching staff?
We have been on numerous, we have weekly calls with the Department of Public Health and the Commissioner of Education. The intent is that teaching staff would be in group what's known as 1B. Okay. So, you know, that's the group after the medical professionals, first responders. Group 1B is a very large group. It yeah. includes vulnerable populations. So where educators would fall in that remains to be determined.
Okay. Thank you.
Patrice, Cindy Ludi, Preston. I'm just wondering, will vaccinations be required for educators to go into the classroom when it's available?
That, I do not anticipate a statewide mandate, no. And so it would actually be a local collective bargaining issue. And I'm not sure, certainly in hospital settings, I know, for instance, Waterbury Hospital has for years required all of its staff, including staff that works in the offices, to receive the flu vaccination. But that is a local employer decision.
Oh, okay.
Patrice, I was wondering if you had thoughts about the CAPS proposal for funding. You know, if you see, you know, what are the strengths or maybe concerns that you're hearing from board members across the state about? I know it's been broadly spread or shared in terms of some big ideas, but I didn't know if you had any thoughts specifically.
Yeah, we Fran Rabinowitz did brief us in the broad context. We have not yet seen the specifics. I think certainly the broad context is something that CABE would be very supportive of. The challenge is it requires significant new state money, which we are very supportive of, but in this current fiscal environment, that will obviously be a challenge. And that's really been the challenge with all of the state's school funding efforts. It's not necessarily the formula per se that is the problem. The problem is that the state commitment to fully fund any of those programs has never been met.
Cindy Ludi again. Patrice, I just had one other question about the exemption for religious purposes in terms of all vaccinations for school children. If the legislator votes that there will no longer be an exemption for that, and then parents decide that they don't want to send their children to school, then is the district, I'm assuming the district would be required to provide some alternative educational format for them.
Again, that would be up to the legislature. In the current environment, under the current law, if you did not claim a religious exemption and did not meet the vaccination requirements, your student would not be allowed to enroll, and the district would not have an obligation to provide an alternative. Essentially, the parents would assume the responsibility to homeschool the child.
Oh, okay. Okay. Thank you.
But you raise a very good point. I mean, the legislature could both remove the religious exemption and put an additional responsibility on school districts, which again, at this point, while many of your staff have become proficient at virtual instruction, that would obviously be a significant new burden that we would need to oppose.
Patrice, is CABE going to be doing, pushing forward any other type of legislation in the, you know, that CABE supports?
Yeah. We actually, our State Relations Committee met earlier this week and identified our legislative priorities. They're really in three big areas. One is around more support for social and emotional learning, both professional development for educators and other resources for students and families, including counselors, streamlining the professional development mandates so that districts have more opportunity to focus their professional development in areas of greatest need, such as skills in distance learning. Second big bucket is around funding issues, and that are specific priorities to remove the cap on the special ed excess cost grant, since that impacts every district and is the most unpredictable aspect of your budget in many cases. And then the third bucket is to support diversity, equity, and inclusion. And that includes supporting local equity work, which I know a number of your districts are engaged in, and investing in programs that support the cultural competency of educators, and supporting programs to promote the training, hiring, and retention of a more diverse workforce. So those will be our specific priorities, but obviously any education issue that arises on which CAPE has a position, and we have many positions, we will be testifying and also making sure that you're aware of those issues as they come up.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Patrice, comments, thoughts?
This is Tim Hagen again from East Lyme. I understand that the state is going to roll out a curriculum, I think available this coming school year culture and equity, diversity type of a thing. And it's quite a landmark, I guess, for having such a statewide curriculum of constructed and made available.
Yes, that is true. The legislature 2 years ago passed legislation. The course is African-American and Latino studies.
That's it.
And the department has worked with a broad array of experts and stakeholders in developing the curriculum. The State Board of Education just approved it at their meeting earlier in December. The legislative requirement is that districts who wish to pilot this can do so in the 2021-22 school year, and that they will be required to offer the course at the high school level as an elective in the 2022-23 school year. Mm-hmm. Just to be clear, that the requirement is that the course be offered. If you have local thresholds for enrollment and you don't meet that threshold, you would not be required to run the class, just like with any other course you offer. But districts are being encouraged to look at creative ways to perhaps collaborate with another district if you don't have enough students enrolling in your district to do something across district lines.
Good, excellent.
Any other comments or thoughts or questions for Patrice?
Just so you know, legislative breakfast won't include coffee this year because we will be offering them it'll be bring your own coffee. We will be conducting legislative breakfasts. I just participated in one that the superintendents in Fairfield County had arranged. So it is possible to connect with legislators in a virtual environment, and we'll be rolling that out in early January. So I look forward to seeing some of you at that event.
Thank you so much, Patrice. We really appreciate your time this morning.
It's a pleasure, and please, my wish for you is that you stay safe and healthy and have some pleasure in the holiday season.
Thank you.
Thank you, Patrice. The next item on the agenda is the consent agenda, and items 6.1 through 6.3. And typically, unless someone wants to remove a particular item for discussion, we approve the consent agenda in its entirety as presented. So I hear any motion to remove anything? If not, could I have a motion to approve the consent agenda as presented?
Aaron Daniels, move to accept the consent agenda.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second, Cindy Ludi.
Thank you. Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye or wave
aye.
Your
aye.
Opposed? Abstained?
Aye.
And carries.
Can I just make sure, Nikki, I think I heard you abstain, right?
Yes, because I can't really speak to the minutes from the last meeting, so I didn't want to.
Perfect. I just want to make sure we get that in our notes. Thank you so much.
Yes.
Thank you. Information from the executive director is the next item.
Sure. In terms of hiring and resignations, it's been pretty quiet. Obviously, one of our great hires is the director of human resources, Christine's position, which we're excited about. We are worried about our staff. We do have some teachers doing remote teaching right now, and that requires Learn to have proctors in the classroom. So what we're thinking about is a bigger push to do a little bit of a job fair prior to the holiday season to get some more adults and proctors in the schools. We also see a need for our increase in our special education staff, and that has to do with the increase of students at Ocean Avenue. We're getting some more referrals, which is good news. I should have started with the fact that I sent an email yesterday and Learn had a really tough day yesterday. We lost a young man who went through our IS program and your UConn program, and he passed away in a car accident. It was in the paper today. I don't believe his name was mentioned, but he's a local kid, great young man, really had a lot of connections to Ocean Avenue, and it was pretty spectacular, the relationships he made with our high school boys that have some pretty big needs emotionally. They just felt that he loved them and cared for them and wanted the best. So it was a heartbreaking day yesterday, and we're slogging through that. So I Bridget's team, they're just such a family. I mean, Learn is such a good place to be, but they're just really hurting right now. So we're working through that. In terms of other information, we have for you the building committee minutes that are going to be approved. Did I need a motion for that? Is that Jack, are you here? Or is that's actually a part of the information? I'm sorry. It's already approved in the other minutes.
Yes.
Yeah, sorry, I lost my mind there. But what the exciting news here is next week, Learn will be on the docket on December 15th. We will have our second project for the second floor of Ocean Avenue.
Fingers crossed.
Yes, I'm being optimistic. I hope I'm not jinxing ourselves.
No.
But this is a wonderful next step that will get us to this final phase for Ocean Avenue. So we are thrilled, and Jack has literally done yeoman's work in terms of carrying this across the finish line, and I'm really excited to get this project moving once we get on the list on December 15th. Legislative update, you heard most of it from Patrice. We're grateful for that. One of the things that's happening at the RESC Alliance, that when we talk about the RESC Alliance, that refers to the six RESCs and how we see each other as partners. We're putting together a legislative agenda, and we have three big buckets of asks that we're going to be promoting with our lobbyists. The first is a continued funding and increases on magnet school funding. So many of the RESCs do run magnet schools, and flat funding for some. We were lucky in the last round of the legislation that there was an increase to magnet schools, but we need to do our due diligence to ensure we advocate for the students in the schools to get increased funding in this next legislative update. What you'll notice in the CAPS presentation is that actually magnet schools are not addressed in the CAPS. They didn't know what to do with us. They didn't know how to talk about us. So it's really important that the RESCs do advocate for increased funding to ensure the viability of all of our schools across the state. The other component that we are advocating for has to do with school readiness seats. So it's really important the state does funding for school readiness. And that is really to ensure access to early care programming. The nuance here is we're not trying to expand the number of seats. What we need to address is the fact that school readiness funding has been flat funded for over 8 years. And so our private providers and our public providers, that's really a strain as the cost of living increases happen for their employees. And so we need to help advocate. We do have school readiness seats, but we do support our private programs as well. And we just need the state to put some more funding into the school readiness bucket. And the final area that we're asking for funding has to do with a program I've been mentioning over this year, and that's the teacher recruitment program, I'm going to refer to it as TRP. And so what's happening is it is initially a CREC program that we are now going to do across the RESCs. So CES down in Fairfield County, ACES and LEARN are taking, and we are going to mirror the same program in our region. I'm really thrilled that LEARN actually has the most interest and the most participation compared to all the rest across the state. So we're looking around, it looks like 6 different districts are going to be joining LEARN in offering this program and recruiting employees in their districts who are ISs. Paras, everyone has a different term, and recruiting them, supporting them throughout a full 18-month program to become teachers in our districts. And this is to diversify our workforce for many, many reasons. And so we're excited about that program and spreading it across the state. If just based on the numbers that we're seeing now, it looks like within a year or two, we can double the numbers that the state university systems are producing in terms of diverse candidates for us to recruit into our schools. So I think we're just a layer of a support to add to the many different ways in which we're trying to create new teachers that can really make a difference for our kids. And so we are asking for funding from the governor to support that, because we do believe that the return on the investment in terms of the number in increasing the numbers in a pretty dramatic way across the state will be helpful. I believe right now the percent, there's only 8% of our teaching force is diverse, whereas you have 44% of our students are Black and brown. So really making sure we intentionally try to address that gap there. The other thing we're excited about is our young children and families program actually is partnering with Office of Early Childhood, and we are promoting what's called the GEAR program. And the Office of Early Childhood is trying to get electronics and iPads into the hands of our families of our youngest learners to help with that lack of access. So it looks like LEARN will be distributing 400 iPads to this region, and our tech department will be helping these families get them up and running and started and the apps that they need. So we're really excited to be able to partner with the State Department, and they're paying our tech department to do that support work. So it'll be nice across all of our region and your districts that families will have access to more technology to ensure their little ones can engage. Um, I think yesterday we hosted, the RESC executive directors hosted a RESC Alliance convention with 47 of our leaders across the six RESCs. And the purpose of that was really to convey to our RESC leaders in all different roles this message of partnership and collaboration. As the RESC Alliance, we see ourselves as much stronger together. And this idea that this partnership across the RESCs, which has always existed, but really trying to create stronger bonds, is in an effort to position the RESC Alliance as a strategic arm of the State Department of Connecticut Education. So what we really want to be able to do is come to the state and say, we have experts in mathematics, we have experts in English learners development, we have experts in SEL, and we want to be seen as that expert. And what we've already have is we have a great track record to date. So far, the Student Support Services has been the strategic arm for the Bureau of Special Education, and that partnership has flourished. And we have so many projects happening with the State Department. I couldn't even list them off the top of my head. It's really exciting work. But again, what makes the RESC Alliance a powerful partnership is that we are practitioners. We are doing this work. And by doing the work, we can empathize and sympathize with our with our districts and understand what, have a sense of what they need to be successful. And we're also seeing that same type of strategic partnership with the Young Children and Families of the Early Childhood Division. The Office of Early Childhood in Beth Bye, they meet regularly on a monthly basis. And the RESC Alliance, that team is meeting, they had been meeting weekly, now it's meeting biweekly. But that sense of we want every district from every corner of the state of Connecticut to have resources that they need, and the RESC's boundaries shouldn't help or prevent someone from getting the help that they need. So how do we make sure that we strategically support the entire state by understanding what the resources each RESC has, the skill sets, the knowledge? How do we grow our knowledge across the RESCs at the same time? And we really feel like if we want to be relevant in this next stage as we come out post-COVID, which I hope is not too far away, that it's going to be in a unified front. So that message was sent clearly to our RESC leaders yesterday, and we asked for support from the leaders on what are some things that we have to think about, and their different work groups. And the work groups really are diverse. It's from HR to CFOs to obviously our student support services and our professional development branches. So we're really looking at all aspects of the agencies and how can they have an outward-facing service model to support the districts and the various types of districts. We have little small districts, we have large urban districts. We want to make sure we're as dynamic as the state of Connecticut is. So that's what's happening in the RESC world. Oh, the last one, which is really, it doesn't sound so exciting, but it's really a different approach, is for the first time ever, a non-education department has come to the RESCs and asked for support. So the Bureau of Aging and Disabilities has actually come to us, and this is the bureau that works with adults with severe disabilities, and they are looking for the RESCs to create trainings that can be used across the states for their staff on how to support adults with disabilities. So our teams across the RESC Alliance are building for a non-state Department of Ed program. And this is a really innovative way in which the departments across the state are working together. We see this as a model for the nation. So we're really excited about what we're doing in terms of breaking down barriers of how departments have to work in silos. More to come. And Sarah Moon and Bridget Gordon-Hickey are leading the charge as always, which I'm so proud to have them on our teams. And we'll talk more about it as those trainings get created and then get offered, and we can talk about the impact of our work, because I think that's the most exciting part. So that's what's happening in the world of Learn.
Craig, I had a question for Kate.
Sure.
How will the iPad distribution, to which families would be chosen? How are they going to go about doing that?
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to have to get you those details. I know that families, there's a process that the state has created that then Carol Glenn and her team have to operationalize. But I can send that detail. I'm sorry, I don't have that level of detail for you. But that's a great question. So I'll get back to you on that, Rita.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Kate? Kate, I had a question. Actually, I don't know if it's, do we expect, now we've been in COVID for a while, do you expect any uptick in resignations or retirements going forward? Or do you think just the opposite?
We're kind of in a precarious position right now because right now we have a handful of schools that actually are operating remotely because staffing is so limited for various reasons. It's they might have to be quarantined, or their child's quarantined, or they have COVID, or for various reasons. So I know that the level of stress in the Learn schools is very high. And part of that obviously is post Thanksgiving and this idea that, you know, we've been told and we're seeing that there's a surge in cases across the country. So people are feeling a lot of anxiety about that. When we turn the corner, the date that's going to be interesting is when we turn the corner mid-January post Christmas, you know, bump. We're gonna start to ask our teachers to return out of that remote mode. I think that when I do that, I'm going to see resignations. I think that people are not willing to come back. Whether or not we are offering Learn, we had been offering leaves, which I don't know in mid-year if we're gonna offer, you know, a leave at this point, but that this is really challenging for us because it's these aren't light positions. These are our science departments. These are our teachers of AP, and not to say that an elementary teacher is invaluable, but it's hard to find some of these replacements. So that's my biggest worry. I don't have a hard number. I think there were two or three in October. We had tried to get open full 5 days a week. And when I told teachers who were remotely teaching, they'd have to come back. There were a small number of people who said, well, we're just going to step out and not teach anymore. So again, I think I'm hoping that the news around vaccines help. It's challenging right now. We're just living day by day, which is not, it doesn't feel very good. I'll just be honest. It doesn't feel good to not be decisive and to make decisions and put your stamp on it. It just, every time I've tried to do that, it miserably fails. So we're just playing it day by day. So the conversations every night are, what's our staffing look like? Can we open the doors? And to be fair to families, what I don't like about this is I don't like that last minute decision, but at the same time, I don't want to just make a sweeping decision to close for the next 2 weeks, because if I can have students in the buildings, I that's my preference. But, I'm not finding a good place to land on any of my decisions beyond what's the data of today. And what's the best decision for this moment. But I, I don't know about the retirements either, Craig. I have one person or two people put in writing their retirements back in September because of our process at LEARN. But I don't have more than that at this time. And also, as you know, we have a really young staff. We don't have a lot of people near retirement age. So that's why we don't see a lot of retirements at LEARN.
Hey, can I say something? This is Tim Hagen from East Lyme.
Please.
Kate, one of the things that we're doing or starting to do in East Lyme is we're starting to think at the superintendent level and at the principal level, just start to reflect on all the good things that have happened and the exciting things that are going to be before us come in the summer and for next year. Just starting that initial conversation of saying, you know what, we have accomplished a lot of things. There's been a lot of challenge and a lot of, just what you were saying, but there actually are some pretty exciting things that have happened with technology and the use of the having the technology available and kind of looking forward. And it's remarkable. We saw it at our board meeting. We actually asked one of our principals, said, so how, tell me about the positive things. And he just opened up and just went on and on. And you could see that he was starting to feel good because he was starting to see that there's a future. I don't know. That's just something you might want to think about. And I think it has to start with you at the top.
Yep.
And kind of inch into your team and then down into through your organization to kind of start opening that door up.
Thank you, Tim. I appreciate that feedback.
Thank you, Tim, too. Any other comments or questions? Okay, let's move on to the next item on the agenda, which I believe is old business. And we have one topic there. It's the revised policy number 505, students, sex discrimination, and sexual harassment, which is primarily related to the changes that have been made in Title IX regulations and procedures. And it's our second read. And we need a motion to approve the revised policy number 5005, student sex discrimination and sexual harassment. So if I could have a motion to that effect.
This is Diane Lieberman at Freedom 18. And I'll make that motion.
Thank you.
And Rita Volkman, I'll second it.
Thank you. Any discussion on the policy or comments? All right, hearing none. Let's vote. All those in favor, please say aye and or wave your hands.
Aye.
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 Opposed? Abstained? All right, motion carries. Thank you. Next item is new business.
I'll just frame this if that's okay, Craig.
Sure.
So we have two new policies, the business and non-instructional operations and office surface records and reports, and the business and non-instructional operations. This is about electronic communication use and retention, and we have to keep all of our electronic communication for 7 years. And how do we destroy those electronic and paper records? And this is as a final resolution to the audit feedback that we were given. So these two policies were marked as a need to be implemented by our auditors in the last year and actually a couple of years. So we've gotten this done. So now we're going to be in full compliance with the auditors, which will put us in good shape. Although we have been doing this practice, having the policy is just as important. So that's where we were. We just needed to catch up. So that's a first read on that one.
Great. Thank you. I guess there's The other new policy is business and non-instructional operations.
Those are both.
Those are linked, those two, 9192? Yes. Okay, good.
Yes. One is how long you have to hold on to your records, and then the other one is when you destroy the records, what's your process?
Great, thank you. And the next item then is the magnet tuitions. Perhaps you would like to say a word about that as well.
Okay. Sure. So what you'll see here is our magnet schools. This is the tuition that our towns pay when they send a student to our magnet schools. What you'll notice is the Friendship School has a 0% increase. And that is because as a pre-K program, we cannot go over the $4,036 tuition that the state mandates. So that is capped. So we can't collect more than that. That's actually for parents to pay. It's not for towns. So that has to remain at zero. The Regional Multicultural Magnet School, we're looking at a 1.51% increase, which per student is a $47 increase. The reason for that is just, again, we want to make sure we keep doing incremental increases to ensure that we keep up with the change of costs of salaries, and we just don't get too far behind that. Then we have to hit our districts with maybe a 5 or 6% increase in 1 year, which would not be as manageable. Marine Science being high schools and Three Rivers, again, you're seeing the increase in costs having to do with just our staff is maturing and getting on in years in a great way, and their salary increases are happening. So their 1% increase is equivalent to $61 per student. And so does anyone have more specific questions on that? So we would need a motion on that, Craig.
Sorry, I was speaking while muted, which is on Zoom. Hearing no other comments, I'm going to ask for a motion to approve the 2021-2022 magnet school tuitions as presented. The Friendship School 0% increase, Regional Multicultural Magnet School 1.51% increase. The Marine Science Magnet High School, 1% increase, and Three Rivers Magnet Middle College, 1% increase. If I could have a motion to that effect.
Karen Daniels, so moved.
Thank you, Al. Second?
Second, Cindy Ludi.
Thank you. Is there any discussion on the motion? Okay, hearing none, let's go to the vote. And all those in favor, please say aye or wave your hand.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? Motion carries. Thank you, everyone. Next item is special education tuitions. And again, Kate, if you'd like to give some context.
Sure. So, you know, as I realize, there's really nothing. You don't really need to vote on this because we're not increasing it, but we wanted to just show you that we do take a look at our tuitions year to year our analysis with Bridget and her team, and looking at the staffing that she has and the number of students she has, we feel pretty confident that we don't need an increase for next year. So we just wanted to show you that it's not just a quick decision. There is a process that we do, not just with our teams, but with the executive committee as well, about thinking around that. And at this time, I think we're in good shape with our outplacement program. So we're going to remain steady with the special education tuitions. And again, trying to really control costs for the region so that they have the best product, but at the same time, at the most cost effective rates that we can provide.
Okay, I'm going to follow your suggestion here. If I think you're right, there is no need to have a motion to approve nothing. We will, unless there's an objection, we will forego a vote here on the special education tuitions. And move on to the next item, which would be the Ocean Avenue Learning Academy project.
So just so people understand, when you have a building project, you need a committee to monitor the process and the expenditures and the change orders. And that is a commitment. And we're really how we operated last year, or last project, I should say, was that myself and the executive committee and a community member made up this committee. Actually, it wasn't me, it was Dr. Howley. So we're just mirroring that same practice. Non-voting members would be Bridget, Jack, and Mike, because obviously their expertise is dearly needed as we make decisions. But we do need to just formally create this this building committee. So this act will do that.
For people, you know, this is a state requirement, I believe. And so if people are wondering, that's why we're doing it. So again, if I could have a motion to approve the charter and members of the Student Support Services Ocean Avenue Learning Academy Project 2 Building Committee as presented.
Rita Volkman, so moved.
Diane Linderman, second.
Great. Is there any discussion, questions, comments? If not, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye, thank you. Opposed? Abstained? Motion carries. Next two items are the results of our contract negotiations with the new LEARN Administrators Organization and the LEARN Education Association Teachers Contract. And Kate, if you'd like to speak to both of those.
Sure, sure. I'm gonna, if you don't mind, I'm gonna share my screen. Before I start, I just wanna make a formal thank you to this negotiating team for the administrator's contract, Tim Hagen, Craig Esposito, and Naomi Rodriguez. I can't tell you how much I appreciate the feedback, the thinking, and just the reflection that you provide during the negotiations. In terms of spirit of negotiations, so what makes this an interesting time? I'm just checking. People can see my screen right now. Is that okay? Good. There had not been previous to this year. There had never been a union for our administrators. We have 18 members right now, and they had elected last spring to form a union. And we started this year with an MOU just to get us through the year with the understanding that we would go into negotiations this fall for a full contract. So we're really happy about the contract. What you'll see is the contract, most of it is just codifying practices that we've already had in the past, in terms of types of benefits, health insurance components like that. But what we built that was really challenging, but I think rewarding, was a strategic salary schedule. We wanted to make sure that we started to really take a look and analyze the value of the positions, and also in a comparative value across the positions. So we were able to do that at LEARN. And so we're really proud of this six-step process that gives the administrators a clear understanding of where they stand and where they're going, and also allows LEARN to control costs in a strategic way. So we were happy we could come to that agreement. So in the end, we have our year one is really people just jumping onto that step. So we had to haphazardly kind of place them into the six-step salary schedule. And we did that. Oh, I'm sorry. I was going to have Mike talk about this too. Mike, do you want to, Mike Bell, would you like to talk? I'm sorry. I kept going.
No, that's fine. No, you were doing a great job there. basically,
Yeah, no, I was very pleased that we were able to do a strategic salary schedule. So what that did was over a 6-year period, what it's going to do for all of our administrators is really put the value on the jobs that we value the most. And so as Kate was saying, the first year it was challenging because we had to take a look at where everybody is now. And we built this 6-year step schedule, which has each step as you progress. And it's important to know that your very first year, it's where you are on the step is not equated to your years of service. It's where you are as you're getting paid today. So in order for us to get people on step, some of them were in between a step. So that's why you see a large increase. In addition, we had to do what we call 3 market corrections, because when we took a look at the Hartford region and the Southeast Connecticut region, we had 3 specific positions that were way below market value. And so we did a structural change to those 3 that drove the percentage increase up. So that's where we get to the 3.25 in the first year. The second year, everybody is on step. So they're moving through the step and the step is 2.5%. The people that have hit the top step will get what we call a red circle, a 2% increase. So you'll see we have 2 or 3 folks on that. That's why it's a little bit below the 2.5. And then in the third year, it gets to a 2.38. I think the entire group, it worked out really well. I think the administrators are happy that they have consistency for the future. We're happy that we have a nice strategic plan for the future. And I kidded Kate, we actually ended the negotiations early, and I'm not used to doing that. So I was very pleased.
So it's a different world at LEARN. We did that in 3 meetings. We were very proud of our committees and the intention and the real desire to come together to formalize this. So are there any questions about the contract? I know I'm not going in page by page, but I know you saw it last night. Go ahead, Cindy.
I just had a question. Could you clarify is that 2% increase, that red circle increase?
Yeah, so I can explain that.
All the other?
Yeah, so once you hit what we call step 6, so you've hit the high on step 6 of the grid. If you're at step 6, say in fiscal year 21-22, for 22-23, you'll still remain on step 6, but you'll get a 2% increase from your prior year salary.
Plus the 2.5 increase?
No.
Well, no, because they will have reached that high point, meaning they're at step 6. Over okay. step 6, they're going to get 2%, not 2.5 plus the 2, just the 2.
Okay. Okay.
So it's a little bit below what everybody else is getting,
okay.
But they're still moving higher so that we're valuing that they have another year with us.
Okay. I guess when I saw 2.5% increase and then plus 2 red circle increase, I thought it was both.
Yeah, it's only the red circle increase is only for 2 or 3 folks. So okay. Everybody will be in the 2.5% increase range except for 2 or 3. And that's why it drives down a little bit to the 2.41.
Okay. Thanks, Mike.
Great. And then what you'll see is a parallelism between the health insurance for admin and the health insurance for the teacher contract that you're going to see in a minute. We didn't touch dental and LEARN, just for your information, as you look at your own contracts in your district, LEARN's HSA contribution is $750 for someone who is single and $1,500, which is relatively low. And we didn't move those numbers. So again, I think it was a fair contract. It just put on paper a lot of things that we've already been doing. But I think we walked away, with the spirit of, we work together collaboratively as an admin group and a leadership team. So really, really fortunate to have Christine on that group and Ryan Donlin and Bridget Gordon-Hickey also was supportive. So, and Mike, obviously. So really appreciative of everyone. Do you want to do the motion for this one, Craig, before we go to the next?
Sure, let's do that. I would like to say as well, I would really like to commend the staff for the particularly on the administrators union, a large amount of effort had to go into create and rationalize, not just create, but also make it reasonable and sensible, the salary schedule for the administrator. So that required a heavy lift and a lot of effort and work. So thank you for your doing that. So now we've seen the proposed contract. We need a motion to approve the Learned Administrators Organization administrative contract. Can I have a motion to that effect?
Aaron Daniels, so moved.
Thank you. Second?
Bob Mitchell, I'll second.
Thank you. Any just on what we've heard so far? Again, all those in favor, please say aye and or wave your hand.
Aye.
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 Thank you. Opposed? Abstain? Motion carries. Thank you. Kate?
Yep. Okay, so the next contract, which is nice to be able to do this, both of them today, is the Learn Teachers contract. So what you'll see here, oops, I need to move that over. Why is that over there? First, I would just want to thank Bob Mitchell, Diane Linderman, Cindy Ludi, and Craig Esposito. Your volunteerism and your support, but your thinking, more importantly, is so very much appreciated in these negotiations. And it's always a fun night to hang out with Tom Mooney. He makes it, somehow he makes this fun for us, at least for me. So it's a different contract when you already have one and you're making adjustments. We were really pleased as the leadership team to be able to make some language shifts. And I have to thank Nat Brown for their support and just helping us do some wordsmithing in our contract that was actually creating some bottlenecks for management. And so their language that they proposed was wonderful. And we created some operational efficiencies. So simple things like just making sure we're really clear on how old kids are in terms of getting coverage in their family package for insurance. Some language around prescription. One of the big hangups that we had was a workman's comp language in our contract was not clean. We cleaned it up. We got that through. That was fantastic. So that's going to help us just operate more effectively in our HR realm and as well as in our business offices. So while it doesn't seem monumental, it helps us be better at our work. In terms of salary, Mike, you want to go over that?
Sure. So Learn, because we have a young staff, our costs through STEP are higher than most school districts. So when we start with negotiating this, you usually have a STEP cost, and the STEP cost range is usually in the 2 to 2.25 range. As many of the districts, as you have teachers that are, you know, STEP 15, STEP 16, STEP 17, your teacher salaries are higher on average annually, but your STEP costs are lower. Here, we're the opposite. We have a younger teaching staff, so our teachers are still stepping through. So our challenge is that our STEP increase is very high compared to others. So as you can see, just STEP movement alone was 302 in the first year. So 302, 303, and 3.0. So and the teachers union, when we first met with them, that was their key thing, is they really wanted to have STEP movement in all 3 years. So by agreeing to a STEP movement in all 3 years, what we did, and I think it was Craig who we kind of had to play with all the various numbers, but at the end of our negotiations, we came up with a 3.5 in each of the 3 years, with moving some of the numbers very slightly with percentages. But overall, it's a 10.5% increase. And again, on an average, it is a bit higher than most settlements are coming in. But it's primarily due to our young staff, and our annual teacher salaries are lower than most. The health insurance is basically parallel with the administrators. So everybody has a 1% increase, and our contribution to the HSA is the same. One thing that we did agree on is future work. We have a few people that are what we call coordinator positions. So we'll have to come back and talk about that. And I think that's primarily it. Again, I was pleasantly surprised at the efficiency that we were all able to do and the give and take on both sides. And I think at the end of the day, I think it was very positive.
And just finally, both of these contracts were ratified by both unions this week. So this is the final step for us, if it's acceptable to the board.
I have one quick question.
Yep.
In terms of future work, wasn't there also going to be a committee formed to look at
stipends?
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you. You know what? I was writing that slide yesterday and I couldn't remember the second one. So I appreciate you reminding me. So there is a desire for discussion around our use of stipends and who's getting stipends. And I believe they're gonna play an advisory role. I think that's the language that we settled on. So thank you, Diane, I appreciate that.
I had a question about Article 8, the leaves of absence.
Yep.
The sick leaves, I've never seen it spelled out this way. You know, for 145 through 186, you know, you get your sick leaves. It just seems unusual to me. I've just never saw, was there a reason for putting this?
That has been there historically. And my understanding is that's prorating of your days. So we hire people mid-year. So you don't get all the days if you're coming in at the mid-year. So that allows HR to do a fair process for people and not arbitrarily decide whether or not or how many sick days to give someone who comes in April 1st versus October 1st.
Just the first year. It's not an ongoing thing.
Correct.
Oh, okay. And are teachers paid out for the 175 days when they retire?
Not at all. No.
Not at all. Okay. Thank you.
But to that, there is a grandfather clause that historically there's teachers who, I think it's 2008, if they were hired prior to that, they can get a severance package, but they only get 25% of the sick days that they have left. So if you have 100 days, you only get, we'll pay you out for 25. But that number, I think we're down to almost 21 or 22 teachers left who are eligible to receive that.
Wow. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions or comments? Again, I want to thank the administrative team for all their work on this. They did a great job. And I think it's indicated by the fact that neither contract went to mediation, which I'm sure we were all happy for. So thank you again for all your work. Hearing no other comments, let's look for a motion to approve the Learn Education Association teachers contract as submitted. Can I hear a motion to that effect?
I'll make that motion, Cindy Lutie.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Aaron Daniels will second that motion.
Thank you. Any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye, please.
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? Motion carries. Thank you for approving it. For approving both of them.
Yes. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Next item is educational perspective, which I believe we have no presentation at this time. So we'll move to the roundtable future agenda items, which can include any comments you might have on educational perspective, educational perspective, or any district updates, challenges, or opportunities in regard to the pandemic or anything else. So if people have any thoughts or comments they want to make, now is your time.
Craig, I would like, if Kate, could you send out to all the member districts. How many are in school 5 days a week? How many are in a hybrid? And how many are doing totally remote? I know we're doing totally remote, and it probably will be extended through Christmas, depending on the COVID numbers, at the rate of the increase in the numbers. I think you're meeting with the superintendents this afternoon.
Yep.
And they're going to have a discussion when the numbers from the state come out today. Yep. So for each town. But I would be just curious how many schools, towns are 5 days a week. I think North Stonington is now.
I'm not sure about North Stonington, but I will collect that data for the region, and I will have that hopefully by Friday. If everyone shows up, I can have it faster, but I'll try to have that as quickly as possible, because that's timely to have that information.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Kate, that actually is Craig. It actually raises an interesting question. I don't know, in terms of service to the learned district, have any of the superintendents or districts asked for a sort of a dashboard of any type that might include basic information? Or, I mean, it's not like you folks don't have enough to do already.
Well,
but is there anything we can offer that, you know, since that's our point, is service, or anything along those lines of Rita's question that we could sort of compile on a weekly or monthly basis that would be helpful? But, you know, you hear the questions that the superintendents ask.
Yeah, I think what happens is through the MSSA and CICASA superintendents group, now that we meet once a week, especially starting last spring, is every time there was a decision point, we used a Google Doc, and you said, who's gonna do, you know, who's gonna grade with pass fail, who's gonna grade with real grades? And then everybody would list their answers. And then when we were talking about opening, so that really has been a running record for the superintendents to use about where we are. We haven't used the Google Doc recently. I just think that people are on from LearnSync's perspective, we're in and out every other day. So we really haven't been filling that that Google sheet, but it might be a good time, especially as Rita alluded to, the fact that there might be a decision point to be made and how we look at this holiday, the next, you know, 2.5 weeks. So
our district.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. The teachers are really, really pushing for 2 weeks after Christmas also. So they were the ones who pushed to have us out for the 2 weeks after Thanksgiving. Yeah. And then again, they'd like that. So it's really being driven by the teaching staff.
It might be helpful, if you think it's appropriate, to share that, you know, summary of the Google Docs on occasion. And maybe that's what you were saying in any event, but that might be helpful or of interest to board members. I'll, you know, again, leave it to your discretion.
Yep, that sounds fine. I think what's hard right now is when you talk, every day you listen, you know, I thought it was great to hear Dr. Fauci talk about schools being some of the safest places to be across America, you know, and that's wonderful, but at the same time, it doesn't help that our hospitalization rates are skyrocketing, and our, you know, the deaths are skyrocketing, and it's just, it's very, it's challenging. Yeah. So we're just trying to figure out, how do we balance between being consistent with how we make the decision? And then sometimes the decision, unfortunately, is being made for us with the staffing. So limitations that we have.
I had a quick question, Cindy Lutie again, about closing the schools. I know, like in our town, we just had a case of that where if someone's been exposed to someone who is infected, or someone in the community, in the school community, is infected, we only have two schools, so both of the schools close. In the larger districts, like Groton or New London or Norwich even, is that the case too, that if there's an incident at one school, all the schools in the district close?
No.
Oh, So, because I wondered why we closed both of our schools, but we do. So, I thought, and I didn't know if that was something that was, you know, just a given that that's what you do.
No, we actually, you know, for East Hartford, we had to close because of staffing for the high school, but we kept the elementary open. And then we just recently had to close the elementary for staffing issues. But yeah, we've been trying to keep our doors open at any cost. So like Ocean Avenue actually has been the most successful with the most kids day by day. We have about 95% of the students attending 4 days a week. We did switch to a hybrid model this next 2.5 weeks, just to ensure that if staffing gets stressed, we don't want to close the doors. So if we have hybrid, we have plenty of staff to handle the staffing shortages that happen. So that's just a short-term solution to get through this 2 weeks. But yeah, we're really trying not to just make blanket decisions where we close. And I think Waterford was closed. Their middle school was closed because of staffing shortages, and they did not close the other schools. But those are some examples. And feel free if you want to share some of your experiences.
Again, I'll repeat that, you know, the staffing is like the weak link in this whole thing. And it almost doesn't matter whether the schools are safe or not. They could be the very safest place, but your staff are in the community and they wind up having to isolate and quarantine, and then you're left without the staff. So I think it's going to be kind of grim going forward, because I think we're going to see increases in the community levels, and that's going to put pressure on the staffing, regardless of what happens in the schools per se. So it's going to be tough.
We also had an interesting poll yesterday from our high school. A poll was sent out to parents and students, and how many students would come back to school from our distance learning December 14th for the 7 days before Christmas holidays, and only 37% said that they would send their children to school. So I think that that's a real consideration also for us. You know, if there's really not going to be two or three children in a classroom, whether or not we'd even open. So they seem to really enjoy, especially middle school and high school, the full remote. I think it's much more challenging for elementary school. But
one of the things that we talked about was, as superintendents, we're very worried about the social emotional state of our high school kids. I think they're hurting right now. I think they'll tell you they're fine, but it's hard. I see it at my own house with my own two children. I mean, they literally sit in bed from 7 a.m. till 3 o'clock, and they're on the computer because, you know, wherever they work, it's just they don't move all day, and they're committed to that computer. So I know at our schools we're having some really interesting conversations about, you know, how do we make sure we're just checking in, and this has been ongoing. It's not like we just started, but just really checking in. That I think the long term component of this, it's heavy. So how do we spark joy, you know, for kiddos online or experiences? And I think there's that, to Tim's point, there's some really nice things that principals are doing, the teachers are doing. Sometimes they don't come up to my level enough, you know, to hear about the really cool ideas that are happening. But there's definitely some a heaviness for our middle and high school kids.
Bob, you had something?
Yeah, this is a concern going forward. I mean, we're in response mode. We're doing a great job of, you know, mitigating the circumstances we're currently in. But what I'm looking at and wondering about it are, has anybody really started thinking about how to evaluate and mitigate the learning loss these students are having? I mean, as great as we're doing with hybrid, there's significant learning loss. We're setting these children back, not intentionally or not another way of handling it, but we are setting them back. And I did bring it up at our last board meeting. You know, it's something we have to start thinking about now, because this is what we're going to be doing in 21-22 if we open.
Right.
That was, again, that's just a concern I had.
No, I think that's a very valid. It is going to be an issue. I think people are so busy running on the treadmill now, they really, even if it's, they have an issue for them, they're not ready to address it yet. So, but we will have to eventually.
I just brought that up at a board meeting, and our superintendent is going to try to save some COVID money for summer school to help with, you know, the learning loss for all levels, which I think will be wonderful if we could do that. And I know our teachers are very concerned about the SBAC testing, what's going to happen, you know, for the districts that are going 5 days a week. Is there going to be a difference in the SBAC from the learning, the ones that are remote, the ones that are hybrid, or, you know, it's just, there's questions about AP exams and IB exams. So a lot of stress for teachers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think what I'm hearing is leadership is looking to Dr. Cardona to really think twice about the SBAC. And there's, what we hear is there's a mixed message of, you know, it's not necessarily about holding people accountable. It's about knowing where people are off of that test, you know, but it just feels hard to be testing people. You know, some kids haven't turned their camera on the whole year, you know, and you're going to have them tested on something. But I'm still kind of weighing that in. I understand this idea of having real data to actually, you can't create a learning loss plan unless you know exactly what students have, what skills and knowledge they have. So there needs to be some type of assessment. I think what I hear from superintendents is, can't we just use our local assessments to drive that rather than these state tests, which again would be logistically, I don't know how you do state testing for a student who is remote. I don't know what that looks like. How do you create safety or viability or reliability, all that wonderful stuff that comes with state testing?
Yeah, this is Tim. It would create a database that would be invalid. It's absolutely ridiculous to consider doing that at this time. I just can't imagine why you would do that. It's almost insane.
Yep.
The only thing I could say, you might do it to just see how bad things were. I mean,
yeah.
That might be the, as Kate said, not to actually hold people accountable to it, but to just sort of get a measurement or assessment of where we've slid to or haven't slid to. You know, that would be the only reason I can see doing it. It would be a challenge and difficult too.
Yeah. And this is Lindy. I agree. I think I don't even understand how we would begin to remediate if we don't know how far back each student is. And some kids, like you say, you know, they're like Rita, you said, they're really enjoying being on the computer, the high school kids, you know, and I think there are some kids who don't and use it as a way to sort of skirt the issue of the work that needs to be done, and they're falling behind. But how do we remediate if we don't, or who needs to be remediated, or how much remediation we need if we don't have some data to say? And I know at our school there's talk about even now a choice to forego the Spanish class and use that class for certain kids who they feel need it, to use as a catch-up remediation class, which I don't think is a bad idea, but you do need some data to say, what do we need to do? Where are we going? And how much remediation do we need to catch them up to where they should be had all of this nightmare not happened? Mm. So I don't think we can really even begin to look at what do we need to do until we know where we are.
Yeah, that's why I said initially is we have to evaluate it and then figure out how to, you know, remediate it. I mean, this is something that is going to be a long term. We're not going to be able to overcome this learning loss in 1 year, but we need to start planning now on how we're going to do that over the next few years.
It's going to require state and federal help to do it too, because remediation means money, unfortunately. Yep. And, you know, local districts aren't going to be able to address this on their own. So I hope there's some help forthcoming from the larger governments.
And, you know, Cindy, again, the other thing that concerns me too, and that kind of worries me, is at what point, even with remediation, at what point are we going to say, this student is not ready to go to high school, this student is not ready to move on to the next grade, and what do? Keep them back? You know, it just seems like it's going to be really tough, because there are those students who are not engaging in the work that's being sent their way. And so you think about all the hours of school that they're missing, or they submit an assignment with nothing on it, which is very, you know, I talked to my teacher friends and they're frustrated beyond belief, because they work so hard sending out all these assignments and doing these classes. The kids, you know, they'll go on to the class and then all of a sudden they're gone. You know, they sign in and then they leave. And so, you know, it's so out of control. It's out of the means of their control. And I just don't see how we're going to, we're going to need a lot of work to catch these kids up to where they need to be to move on successfully.
I think the silver, I'm inspired by Tim's message. The silver lining here is what we're actually really talking about is, what does good instruction look like? And the bottom line is a state test, you know, in my experience, really never has been a good enough diagnostic tool to really understand what kids know and are able to do. And good districts and good teachers, more importantly, teachers, really understand what the skills and knowledge a kid has and where they need to go from there. And we have to lean into that conversation of what is quality instruction. And, you know, we did that with hybrid and with online teaching. That's kind of like renewed our commitment to, let's really talk about, sometimes there's things in our classrooms that we do, but why? Why do we do that? Why do we do that spelling test? What academically does that spelling test do for us? You know, there's different research and evidence-based practices out there that are really show how to accelerate learning, you know, beyond just a year's growth. And how do we commit ourselves to those conversations to empower kids and teachers? And sometimes, you know, I think teachers are going to have a hard look about what they're assigning, because I feel like sometimes people want to justify, especially in hybrid, that they're working hard by just giving more and more assignments, and the kids are like buried. They're doing hours and hours. And it's like, wait, activities is not the same thing as instruction. And so how do we really talk about what we're teaching? And we're having great conversations about prioritizing, what are kids, you know, what are the skills and knowledge we really have to get into? And, you know, and so it has been a kind of a renaissance about talking, going back to, you know, the good conversation of what is good instruction, and how can a good instruction really drive kids' passion and inspiration and skill development. And that they talk about the idea that when a child is inspired, it's actually a social emotional strategy. It lowers their levels of stress. And so how do we think about that with our teachers, of bringing inspiration into the classroom, so that they don't feel like this idea of coverage, you know, is what's important, you know, and how, and it's hard in the classrooms like AP. That's a different conversation, because that really is a coverage class. That's not, the only purpose is, you know, how many thousands of pages can the kid read and take a test on? But we do have control in other courses, and how do we give teachers permission to just go deeper and in those skills and knowledge? And so I'm excited about that for our Learn staff, because we've started those conversations, and I think they're in a different place, because their model has been broken what they knew and what they've done before, every assumption that they said, you know, that they thought about teaching and learning has been shaken. So now's the time to really kind of come back and say, well, let's not pick up some practices that were bad, you know, not bad, but just not having an impact on student learning. And how do we grab some building blocks that really will drive and accelerate students to where they need to be?
Yeah, but I think that's a good point you make, Kate, about acceleration too, because remediation takes time, you know, and you take the time away from something else that they should be doing at that point to remediate what they've lost. So yeah, I guess you'd have to almost like redesign the curriculum on some level.
Possibly.
Yeah. Glad I retired.
Your timing was good, Cindy. Yeah. Any other questions or comments, thoughts? Okay, well, hearing none, I'll entertain a motion for adjournment.
So moved, Bob Mitchell.
Thank you. Second? No one wants to second it?
I'll second it. Rita Volkman Groton.
Thank you, Rita. We might have been here forever. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Great. Meeting is adjourned. Thank you, everyone. Have a great holiday season.
Happy holidays.
Everybody be
safe. Happy holidays. Stay well.
Be safe. Happy holidays, everyone. And we're going to stay for our executive committee.
Okay, Kate, I was just going to ask, you want us to
stay? That's all right.
Okay.
Yeah. Great. I think, Jack, are you leaving? Jack and Donna, you're...
Jack fell asleep, I think.
And I'm going to stop recording, too.
I was just going to mention that.
Perfect.
Very good. Then I will sign off. Oops.
I'm just trying to figure out how to turn this off. That's not it. What am I doing? How do I? Oh, here we go.